Or maybe even just changing it up. Like sometimes taking a break from something will give you a new perspective on it as well. Okay. So maybe take a couple of months, train something different, come back to what you were training before, and then see if you have a new perspective on it as well. It's not a bad.
Hello friends, I am Pao Wenzel and welcome back to another episode of the Lollapalooza of Strength, Fitness, Movement, and Self-Development, the Uncharted Performance Podcast. Our goal is to learn and apply from the best and brightest in these fields by dissecting and deconstructing their personal journeys and accumulated wealth of knowledge to elevate our performance inside and outside of the confines of the gym, beyond the horizon, and to reach the uncharted. Sadly, we are only two episodes from season six finale, but don't get too nervous yet. We still, on the bright side, we still have two left. This week, we are joined by the awesomely bearded Yuri Marmorstein, originally from Odessa, currently residing in Vegas by way of our hometown, Cleveland. Yuri has been exploring the physical culture for over 15 years as an acrobat, entertainer, performer, and teacher. Personally, I think what he is capable of doing with his body is very, very impressive, but he might not agree given his high standards. We get the wonderful opportunity to get an inside look at his unique learning process that started out by imitating kung fu movies in the backyard many ways back. His advanced practice originated with little direction and has developed into a Webster's dictionary of mistakes to learn from and develop. The better Yuri got and the more he surrounded himself with higher level coaches and athletes, he realized, in his own words, how shitty he was, which motivated him further in his pursuits. We tackled the difficult subjects of getting through plateaus, which all of us, I believe, deal with in training, and appropriate skill development using handstands as an example, but certainly a metaphor for certainly anything that we try to learn. We also define improvement and how to get over fear, his teaching methods and how they have evolved over time, how we can become better teachers, and the process through which adults learn new concepts and skills. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a second to rate and review on iTunes. It means a ton to us, let us know how to improve, and helps to give our guests gain more exposure. Last but not least, make sure to tag us on Instagram or Twitter whenever you are catching the show. If you ever have a guest in mind that will be a great fit for Uncharted, definitely let us know. You can do so by sending us a direct message on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, or you can email us at contact@unchartedperformance.com. We would certainly love to hear from you. I think I said certainly like seven times already in this intro. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, prepare for a great episode on how we can not only become better students, but teachers as well. Take care, guys. Bye.
Are here with Yuri Marmorstein. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. We're at North Chagrin Park Reservation in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio. You're making a trip back, right?
Just to visit the family. I mean, I grew up here, so we moved here from Odessa in 92 or something like that.
Okay.
So my family's still here.
Gotcha.
So once a year or so, I make a visit.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Very cool. Well, welcome home.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for making the time to visit with us. It is a lovely afternoon, or evening, rather. Just make sure you bring your bug spray. I didn't, and I guess mosquitoes love me. So if you get bit, I apologize.
Yeah, I have the blood type, I think, that they all eat.
Okay, yeah. So if you do get mosquito bites, you can blame it on me.
No worries. There's a cure for them it's kind of brutal, but it works.
What is it?
If you pour boiling water on a towel and then put that towel on the mosquito bite, you feel a sharp sting. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it denatures the protein that causes the itch.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, it burns when you do it, but then afterwards it doesn't itch.
All right, perfect.
So that's...
Drop, interview over.
It's something I read, whatever, old wives tale somewhere, but then I did it and I found it works.
Oh, I'm definitely going to do that when I get home. So thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate that. Like I was telling you before we just started, every time somebody comes on the podcast that has an awesome beard like yourself, I always ask them, how long did it take to grow that beard? What kind of maintenance do you do on it? And any advice for those that are looking to grow a beard like yours?
So I can't say how long it took because I do trim it every couple months.
Okay. How much do you trim?
I give it an inch or two. So whenever I go to the trimmer, I'd say, you know, like inch or two off the bottom and it grows out on the sides. So I haven't trimmed the sides down.
Okay.
Used to do it myself, but like when you can find a guy who can do it better, it's always a good thing.
Okay.
I use a variety of beard products. I have like whatever oil and beard balm and beard shampoo. And for me, like because my skin is really sensitive, being redhead, it's I have to be careful what products I use. Mm-hmm. So I'm still on the search, I think, for the one that I can end the right my journey one. With. But yeah, I'll oil it in the morning. I'll comb it. So I have a wide tooth sandalwood beard comb.
Okay.
I have a finer comb as well, but I can't really get through most of the hair with it, like just the sides. So yeah, there's definitely maintenance involved. As far as growing it, I'm sure genetics play a role as well, but I think I pretty much always wanted a beard ever since, like before I could grow one. Yeah. I always thought like, man, I would love to have hair on my face.
Okay.
So then when, you know, whatever, my first like trash stash popped out, I was like, yes. And then even I remember in high school, I'm sure it was like trashy looking, but I grew the big sideburns.
Okay. Very cool, man.
I'm still trying. For a while, yeah. I had like a short trim beard for a while. It was only the last couple of years I started just to let it go. Mm-hmm. I should have done it sooner, I think.
Does it ever get in the way?
Oh. It gets in the way, so eating, if the mustache gets pretty long, sometimes you eat the mustache, or sometimes I've been flossing my teeth, and then like one of the hairs gets in between the teeth, so there's that. And sometimes the food, like I have to be careful eating anything out of a bowl, because sometimes it can go down. Yeah. So I've been eating like acai bowls at home recently, and once in a while I see like, you know, a couple of purple stains on the beard. There's that. A rope climb, if I'm not careful, like on the way down, I've had it a couple times where I've like grabbed a beard hair and then I have to be very careful there.
I was going to ask in terms of any types of movements that you do.
Zipper sometimes. And then the other thing, this is just kind of funny for me, because I spend a lot of time like rolling on the floor and that kind of stuff. And because I oil my beard, if I'm laying on my stomach, I'll get up and I'll see like this oil slick from the beard on the floor. Oh, it's pretty funny.
It is.
So hopefully no one slips on it.
So actually we had a conversation with a gentleman earlier today. I'm actually going to ask you the same question because of the variety of movement practices that you have experience with. So let's say we're on a plane together, right? I'm sitting next to you. And I ask you, Yuri, what do you do for a living?
I still haven't found a good way to answer that. I let other people say it for me. The easiest thing, I don't even know, because I do a bunch of different things. Like I'm still finding the right answer for that, because I don't think there is. Mm-hmm. The easiest thing to do is, or to say, I guess I talk about handstands and people give me money.
That's a simple way to put it.
Yeah.
But I think there's more to that. I hope
there's more to it, but I do a lot of different things. So I have a book out. I'm trying to write more, but it's a slow process with how many things I do.
What is the title of the book?
Balancing the Equation. So it's on handstands.
Okay.
It's
very cool.
Very much. I guess I'd call it more of an instructional, like a technical manual, probably more than anything else.
Okay.
I do that. I do some other writing. I post photos on Facebook sometimes. That's kind of like a separate job. I do some performing. It's been honestly less this year because I've been traveling so much more, and the entertainment industry is it's a very last minute industry.
Okay.
So if I'm planning travels, whatever, a few months in advance, you don't get that kind of notice with performing gigs usually.
Gotcha, yeah.
So I do some of that. Some random odd jobs here and there. Like sometimes I do some stagehand work, some random manual labor.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Just to, I guess, as a point of reference, how old are you?
30.
30. Okay. When did you start exploring movement seriously?
It's hard because even the word, I feel like, might have lost some kind of meaning due to how much it's been used.
So if what would be a better word then?
I don't have a better word. I use acrobatics because to me it's a very general term, but I'm not trying to – I feel like – not to talk anybody down, I feel like I would feel a bit pretentious saying this is movement that transcends beyond all humanity and this is how humans were designed to move by rolling on the floor and doing handstands or whatever.
Yeah.
So I would feel pretentious saying that, and I don't necessarily believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So movement is anything, right? So as a kid, I played in the woods.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids don't do that today. I played some basic ball sports like baseball, soccer, whatever. basketball. Wasn't very good, but that's movement.
Yeah, yeah. So when did acrobatics?
So I started end of high school, I started getting interested in old school strongman stuff.
Okay.
And within that, they did a lot of hand balancing as well. So that was kind of an introduction. And then that combined with old school kung fu movies like Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, I was into that as well. So the combined with those two, I remember I might have been 15 or 16, and I was watching Highlander the series with Adrian Paul, and he does the kip up, right? And of course, Jackie Chan, whatever, he does 5,000 of those in one sequence. But because, it was big, tall, white guy, so he did one, and they made it really dramatic. And I remember seeing that, I was like, shit, man, this fucking oaf can do this, and I can't. So then I went to the backyard and started trying it. So that was, I specifically remember that, and it took me a while.
All right, so I'm that big oaf, and I still can't, right? And I'm probably not nearly as supple or mobile as Adrian Paul. But one of the unique things that struck us about you and why we wanted to bring you in and bring you on is this whole idea of being self-taught, right? And kind of self-exploration of different practices.
And this is a hard, because even these words, you still have to learn from something. Yeah. So that I feel like there's really not a true self-taught, because especially now, it's like you watch on YouTube. So yeah, you're self-taught, but you're still learning from somewhere. Exactly. And you're still learning from someone else's learning process. But I think there is a value in having your own practice and not always having a reference point.
Okay, so how did you, and excuse me for using it, but
it's all good.
I don't know a different way to put it, but the self-teaching or looking at videos, or how did that process develop after you go into the backyard and trying to
so in the beginning, again, this would have been around maybe 2003 that I started. Okay. So at that point, there wasn't really YouTube.
So it was 14 years ago.
Yeah. So you could watch a movie. I think at one point, that was probably later, my parents got the DVR. So I remember at one point, actually my current capoeira teacher, he's been in Cirque for a really long time, and he was in this show called La Nuba. And I remember this might have been a couple years after that, but I remember he was doing this one movement called Folia Seca. It's like a flip off one leg in his bow. And I specifically remember I was going frame by frame and watching that and trying to analyze and try to get it. And then, of course, I go to the grass and try to throw it, and it was nowhere close. Uh-huh. But I didn't have a smartphone either. It wasn't there yet. So I didn't have a camera, so I didn't have that reference either. So I know for me, it was having a little bit of a direction to go to. Okay. Maybe I knew someone who could do this move. Maybe I saw someone do it. Maybe I downloaded a video, because at that point, there was no YouTube either. So it was like in the tricking community, there was a server where you could download, or Napster or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can download certain videos.
It's bringing me back, man. High school for sure.
Yeah, good times. So it's download this video, watch it 10 times, or whatever, this backflip tutorial, and then you have to go out in the grass and throw it. But you can't, you'd have to run back into the house.
To watch the video again.
To watch the video again. So you try to remember things. And I know for me, it was that combined with just try something different, right? So you try it this way. Okay, I'm going to try it a different way. And then I see, does that work? No, okay, it didn't work. I fell on my face. I'll try something else different. So it becomes, you make a lot of different mistakes, and eventually you have this huge vocabulary of mistakes that become variations.
Okay. How did you track that? Was it just mental? Or
all in my head.
All in your head.
But that's kind of my own special. I wouldn't expect anybody else to track it that way, but I have a really good memory.
Okay, very cool.
And then the other thing, I know I didn't have a lot of exposure, but I went to college in OU. Mm-hmm. Which is 3 hours from here.
Bobcats, right?
Yeah. So whenever I met someone who was a gymnast, or they did capoeira, or they did whatever this other martial art, I was probably too overly excited. But I was like, oh, holy shit, you were a gymnast. Tell me all your secrets. Tell me how you do this.
Okay.
So I tried. I was probably, again, a bit over ecstatic, but I felt it's not often that I have access to somebody who knows more than me.
But when you did, you kind of went after it.
I tried. Uh-huh. So a lot of former gymnasts were not that enthusiastic about it. Too enthusiastic, but it was still new to me. So at that point, I still had the fire in my eyes or whatever. It was sometimes disappointing as well, and it's not any disrespect, but also whatever. Let's say some girl was a gymnast and then she quit when she was 15, but she was good. But then a couple of years in college, gain a few pounds. Can't really do that much anymore.
Yeah.
So to me, it was a little bit disappointing that, what do you mean you can't do anything? You were so good. Don't talk about how good you were. The time is now. But I later on, when I worked within gymnastics, I started to understand a lot more where that attitude comes from.
Did you have a direction, where you wanted to take this?
Or... I still don't have a direction.
So what appealed to you? And why did these things appeal to you?
I thought it was cool, just the idea of body control. And I guess, whatever, probably the overly romanticized idea, but whatever, like the Shaolin monk who has the full control of the body. So this idea was really cool. Being realistic as well, social awkwardness. So maybe I thought if I could do a flip or something, I wouldn't have to do as much real conversing or small talk with people.
Gotcha.
Could try to pick up girls by doing backflips. It didn't work. It was only the dudes that were interested. But
that's usually the case. It's usually the case when guys go to the gym or whatever.
There were these parking meters. I remember, going out into the court street or whatever, which was the main street. Uh-huh. Where I didn't drink, even in college, didn't really drink that much. And we'd do flags, practice the human flag on them. Okay. And sometimes we'd go just on Saturday nights for the grins. And it was always, the girls wouldn't care. And it was always the dudes who were like, bro, that's awesome, man. You're so strong. You have no idea how much respect I have.
That's very cool. No. So you do that now? I'm not picking up chicks, but just that
it's kind interesting that the better I got, I guess the more aware I was of how shit I actually was. And it was the better I got, the less I started to show off in front of people. Okay. And even now, so today I took a couple handstand photos at the cliffs at the mm-hmm. Nelson Ledges. And even then, the people, of course, there's a bunch of overweight people watching, oh, look at this guy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound negative, but almost resentful, bros, I don't do this for free. But it's more for myself. It's not that I care that other people are watching. It's more... go do something. And then also for myself, I have a very high standard, much higher probably than anyone else has watching me. So if I'm doing something and it's not up to my standard, I wouldn't want to do that in front of people. That they know the difference, but I know the difference. So to me, it's...
When did you begin to realize that difference? When did you realize...
I'm still realizing it.
You can't give me that answer. when did you start getting better? I guess not good, but better than
it's a lot of it is just expansion. So it's you're in a small world. So you know, in college we had the Capoeira Club, and there was a few of us that would do a couple flips. Mm. We were okay, right? I mean, if I were to look at that now, I'd be like, go train basics for a few years.
Okay,
and that's what I should have done, but I didn't. But then you start. I mean, moving to Vegas was a big one because then it's but there was a couple. So I know my first real what was the word? Exposure to high-level gymnastics was at a gym I worked at. This guy named Valentin Kirichenko was, I want to say he was an alternate for the 76 Olympics, mm-hmm. so super old school, older dude, late 50s, early 60s, okay. but still...
Well-built.
Yeah, still super ripped for an old dude, could still do some stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, his body was pretty broken, but you don't get to that level of athlete without having...
Breaking down.
A lot of injuries. But I remember... He's a Russian guy, of course. So the criticism you get from a Russian coach is not, they don't sugarcoat it.
Yeah, it's like,
you do everything wrong. Watch grandpa do better. So I know at first, this is a bit of ego on my part. Who is this guy? You don't know me. Yeah. Bro, look, I can do this backflip. But then later I realized, once I saw what he could do and his depth of knowledge, mm-hmm. I realized, okay, that was a really good critique. I should listen to what this guy has to say.
Okay.
So that was really big for me because that was really the first... honest critique that I've had. It was a cold, it was a brutal critique, but I needed it. And I eventually embraced it. Because before that, we would have already trained with friends. But bro, that was awesome. Yeah. That was sick.
And you don't get that feedback from
watching
the video.
Yeah. And now I would never tell myself, if somebody compliments me now, I'd be like, no, take that back. I'll take it back if you don't. So that was a really big turning point. And then the second one, just moving to Vegas in general. So training in Cleveland. There's a couple of gymnastics gyms, and I'm pretty shit compared to most gymnasts who have trained because just I don't have that background. But still in Cleveland, there's not really that community for whatever hand balancing, circus performing.
And I've had this conversation with several other coaches in the area, and it's tough to find someone for, I don't know. So the question is going to be to you, why do you think this is? But high level gymnastics coaches in the area. In Cleveland for some reason. I don't know.
I mean, there's a couple nice gyms, right? And then there's a couple other ones in Akron. One of the best gyms I've been to, I think, was in Akron, the way they had made their setup. We used to go there for some tricking gatherings.
Okay.
But yeah, to go back to the question, so moving to Vegas was huge, or even just visiting Vegas, because mm-hmm. until then, I literally had never met anyone better than me at handstands, and that was it's a really shitty place to be because I wasn't even that good. I thought I was until I realized that I was, and until I trained with real hand balancers who had been training it their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And not just handstands. I mean, Vegas is kind of a hub for that in general because, you know, Cirque is stationed there, so a lot of the best acrobats in the world are training out of there. So that was very enlightening for me as well, like to step out of the small pond and to go somewhere where you're reminded to be humble because there's no place not to be.
Okay. Why did you move to Vegas?
Actually, LA was my original choice because I had a friend who went to do stunts.
Okay.
And at that point, I didn't even know you could do that. So I remember he asked me for advice. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't even know that that's possible to make a living out of. But that was my own conditioning, mental conditioning. So I feel really bad for giving him that advice. But it's good because he proved it all wrong.
Okay.
Like he ended up doing really well. So my original thought was to move to LA to try to do stunts. LA is really expensive to be there. And I feel like my attitude is just, I don't know, you have to really believe in yourself like to make it in LA.
Okay.
Even if you have to really like believe that you're the best, even if it's not the case. Like the, whatever, what's the phrase?
Egotistical?
Fake it till you make
it. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
So that was like, that's really the vibe that I got. And I think I wouldn't have done as well there because I'm not good at talking about myself. I can't be fake. And Vegas is it's a bit cheaper to live in.
Okay.
It was easier, I guess, to find a job. And because it wasn't that expensive to live in, I could work, you know, whatever, like 30 hours a week and still be okay, still have time to train and still make rent and all that.
When you were learning and kind of taking on these new skills, ever hit any plateaus?
It's
ever get stuck for a while?
Absolutely.
And when I mean for a while, like 6 to 12 months, like shit wasn't clicking whatsoever. And if you did, what was it that kind of kept you going? Because a lot of people give up if it's especially, you know, if it's 6 months or longer, right? They're like, let's move on to something else, right?
I've definitely had slumps. The most specific example I can probably think of is one-arm handstand because that's a skill that probably it probably takes a couple of years to learn after you're already at a base level to even be able to do that.
Okay.
So I know that's somewhere where people do hit a lot of slumps. So there's so many ways to approach this. So I try to bring out a few. Okay. So one is, there's a good chance that you're hitting that plateau because the base that you've built isn't good enough for that level of skill.
Okay.
So it's humbling to move back into more basics, but a lot of people need to do that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of times that I could have done that myself and I should have, but I didn't because of ego. Part of it is people move too fast. So it's like, as far as skill progression and that kind of thing goes, you have to pick a progression that you can at least succeed in part of the time. If you're doing something that you're failing 100% of the time, unless you're learning from those failures, it's not really getting you anywhere. If you're doing something that you can do 100% of the time, you have to either move up a difficulty level, make a variation of it, or basically find a way to refine it even further.
Okay.
So part of it is not going back enough. Part of it is trying too much, like not sticking on one progression for long enough. Part of it is just time and repetition. Like I know certain lessons that I've gotten, they didn't click until I had been training them for 6 months. And that was like, oh, that shit someone said to me 6 months ago, now it makes sense.
Okay.
So part of it is time. And it's also, you have to think of it different ways. Like weightlifting, for example, it's very clear, right? Numbers. So it's either you lift more or you do more reps. Whereas with the movement, I don't even want to use this word, but the movement kind of stuff, like a handstand, for example, even though it's static, so it's not even technically movement. But the obvious thing would be, okay, I held it longer or my line is straighter. But there are so many things that you can do without improving either of those that are different levels of improvement, like making variations, like coming into it and out of it more gracefully. Consistency is a big one as well. So maybe I can hit a 60-second handstand 1 out of 10 tries. Which to me doesn't mean shit because I think of it like a marksman.
Okay.
Like if I shoot 10 bullets and I hit one bullseye and the rest are all over the place, that doesn't make me a good shooter.
Yeah.
It's about the grouping. So there's that. I kind of went on a tangent, but...
No, it's all good. Please do.
I think changing the... As far as plateaus, either changing the approach, like changing how you look at it, changing the perspective, going back to more foundational stuff is an important one. Or maybe even just changing it up. Like sometimes taking a break from something will give you a new perspective on it as well. Okay. So maybe take a couple of months, train something different, come back to what you were training before, and then see if you have a new perspective on it as well. It's not a bad thing necessarily.
If looking back at the last 14 years or so, would you have done anything different?
I would have. And it's hard to say because, fucking mosquitoes. Bosses, man.
Yeah, we might do that a few times during interviews.
No worries. I also heard, but I haven't done this, that if you catch them mid-bite and you flex really hard, that you can make them explode.
Yeah, I heard that too.
But I haven't done it.
I'm not fast enough.
Just every time I do, I slap them instead. What was the question? I've done differently.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because what I did, I can't say I have regrets. What I did developed me, I think, a lot more as a teacher because I spent a lot of time making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Had I corrected them sooner, I probably wouldn't have the same base of knowledge of instructional methods.
Okay.
Because I spent so much time making mistakes, I'm a lot better at picking them out in people and seeing the process, before and after because I went through it. For ability level, but just in general, because I didn't spend enough time doing super basic shit.
Okay.
Like,
you were jumping ahead a little bit?
Yeah, because I was excited and it makes sense. And I didn't even know a lot of times that it was a progression. Mm. Like I remember when I was first exposed to the planche, like B-Boy Junior video. Uh-huh. Remember him? He had the buff black dude with atrophied legs who's doing fingertip, planche push-ups. And it looks, when he does it, it looks no harder than just normal push-up.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that. And then I think around the same time that Coach Summer article came out about the planches and front levers. Yeah, and I remember like, I'll just try the hardest variation. I'll just try a planche. And of course, I didn't succeed, sometimes. But my method then, I'm just going to try the hardest variation. And maybe in a year or two, I'll get it.
Okay.
It didn't happen. It took a lot longer. A lot longer than that.
Some people might call that reverse engineering.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't even say it was engineering. It was just repeating.
Okay.
But I think really partly for physical preparation, doing basics, especially in adults, but for skill acquisition, because bad habits get built, and it's very easy to build a bad habit if you're not aware, if you're ignorant of what that bad habit is or what it feels like. And it's guaranteed as far as technical progressions that no one learns it right.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to learn some kind of bad habits down the line, and they're going to be ignorant of those bad habits. And later on, they're going to amplify. So, not being bored of the basics, but really taking the time to just do thousands of repetitions of everything that's basic. Yeah. Same thing like in capoeira. I was very focused on, the fancy acrobatic movements when I should have just done, 100 of each kick a day for a year. And then, just on the kicks, just on the basic steps. And then started to make a game with that instead of trying to think about, I want to do this fancy movement because I saw this master do it.
Okay. It reminds me of actually a book I'm reading right now. It's Mastery by George Leonard. I don't know if you ever read it, but it's essentially kind of good catch, good reflexes.
Too fast.
Too fast. But it talks about kind of enjoying, it's going to sound a little, cheesy, but enjoying the process.
Yeah.
Right, and enjoying the plateaus, like really embracing them and learning from them before you get too far ahead too quickly, and then
it's this idea, and I learned it later on.
Yeah,
I'll use capoeira as an example. The movement, one movement that I learned literally day one.
Yeah,
whatever. 12 years later, I got explained to it in a different way, and I had to relearn that movement, even though I had already been doing it for 12 years. And it was a super basic one. So to me, that became eventually more interesting than doing the advanced skills. Because if I think about years down the line.
Going back to the basics or relearning some of the movements?
Going back to the basics and relearning the basics.
Both. Okay.
Like understanding the basics from a different perspective. Because again, I think a lot about longevity now as well. So if I think in 20 years, it's probably going to be more of the basic movements that I'll still be doing.
Was it harder to relearn than learn in the first place?
It depends on the movement itself, because if a movement's really fast, like a flip, for example, you can't control the timing of how that happens, right? You have a very limited amount of time in the air. And if you're making bad habits within that, it can be very difficult to correct, especially if there's fear involved. You always go back to the bad habits as soon as there's fatigue, as soon as there's fear. But if it's something that's slower, it's easier to change because you actually have an understanding of it. Like a handstand, it's slow. It's a static thing. So if I learn an arch handstand and that's my habit, it's a lot easier to fix it into a straight handstand once I learn what it feels like because the timing's not an issue.
Besides the actual physical expression of whatever movement that you're doing, you know, just trying the movements, you know, trying that planche, anything else that you did, because you seem like super, I want to be as flexible as when I grow up as you, right? What else have you done to kind of, besides the actual training itself, to help you get, I guess, as versed as you are right now?
Just a lot of everything. And I feel like it wasn't enough. I'll be honest, the flexibility, I have like pretty loose skin and a couple of joints are very loose. So I think I was more naturally predisposed towards being flexible than strong.
Great. Thanks.
I know, like as a kid, it's part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the flexibility is a really big psychological component as well.
Yeah.
So I know, like, I remember I got my side splits in a week. I mean, I was already kind of close. I kind of worked on them, but I read the old Pavel book and he talked about the PNF contractions. Relax into Stretch is the book.
Okay, gotcha.
So this would have been, 2005 maybe. So I was already, like, I've been working side splits already, but once I read about the contractions and applied it, I was able to get balls to the floor within a week.
Gotcha.
So, but flexibility, you kind of have to think of it two different ways. One is just like constant maintenance. Mm-hmm. So think, with people, we have our lives. So it's almost like looked down upon to, like in an airplane, right? I'm going to get up. I'm not just going to walk to the bathroom. I'm going to, do a couple of these. And there's going to be, of course, some obese person looking at me like, what the fuck is that guy doing? It's almost looked down upon, but that's a part of flexibility maintenance. It's like, okay, I've been sitting. I need to move my body through this range of motion because if I don't for X amount of time, it's going to be lost to me. And then there's gaining range of motion. And that has a mental component as well because like, this is in the Pavel book, but it's a really good analogy. So side split, if you think there's not a physical structure that connects my right leg to my left leg, right? They're separate. So theoretically, if I can do this with one leg to do it with both legs, what's the problem?
Yeah.
So it's that idea of the whatever subconscious part of your brain is going to limit your actions based on what it thinks it's safe or not.
Yeah.
So a big part of gaining flexibility is being in positions that are initially very uncomfortable and turning that into something more comfortable.
Okay.
So that involves breathing, it involves relaxing, maybe someone sitting on you, maybe contractions, maybe some active lifts. There's a lot of components to that, but it's a very big psychological component as well.
Okay.
And then just building within your body this compulsive idea that I'm going to stretch, I'm going to move. Like I get out of the car, I do some amount of movement because I need to counteract the sitting that I've been doing.
Okay.
Like making that more automatic and more compulsive rather than,
gotcha,
I'm going to do half an hour of stretching today from 7:30 to 8.
Okay. So make it a part of just the entire day versus a certain period of time.
Yeah. Think like a cat or a dog or whatever, they naturally get up and the first thing they do is have a stretch.
Exactly. Exactly. Before we take a quick break, something can you touched upon a couple of times and part of the psychological component is the idea of fear, right? Were you afraid of flipping upside down, going upside down?
So this is really interesting. I'm trying to find out the best way to explain it in words. And I don't know if I can. So like I really wanted it, right? And it's not that I was scared to throw it because I would throw it, but I would throw it sideways.
Okay.
So this is a very like unique component of fear is that my body would react a certain way and I didn't have the control to stop it.
Okay.
So it wasn't that I was afraid to do the move. It wasn't that I was afraid to fall. I fell countless more times than I could ever count. I don't even know if I want to call it fear. It's just the coordination to be able to go in a certain direction.
Okay.
But the fear is going to do a lot of different things. So sometimes it's going to cause a certain reflex. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that reflex can save somebody. Sometimes no. So for example, sometimes when I spot people for a backflip and they're scared, they cut off their jump. They jump like into the ground. And that's very dangerous. Sometimes there's a lot of different reactions.
Okay.
But it's...
How do you get people, I guess, through that mental fear?
There's different tricks.
Okay.
There's different tricks for everybody because you have to kind of see how people react. Being relaxed is a really big one. So like for me, and I'm still, because I'm relearning some of the acrobatic moves that I did a few years ago, and I start to feel that again, like that adrenaline, like, oh. But really, if you can make things more casual, if you can, you know, just relax, just you do it. You do whatever drills you need to make sure that, this is one other thing, the basics that I wanted to talk about, I think I didn't, is whatever basic components are built into this exercise, you want to be able to do them without conscious thought. So like, for example, if I'm doing a backflip and, you know, just the coordination of my arm swing and the jump, I should have already learned that, so it's natural to me without thinking about it, because when I go for the flip and there's, you know, more going on mentally, whatever hasn't been learned like that, it's going to go.
Do you know when that happens? When you don't have to think about it?
It's really different for everybody. Okay. Like I know my own process and I feel it, and sometimes I can't control it.
Okay.
And I can, you know, I can glimpse somebody else's. Like, actually, I learned the most about this working at cheer gyms, because you got a lot of, and I don't want to like talk down the sport or anything, but you're going to see this pattern of, you know, overweight girls who are, let's be realistic, right? The lighter you are, the easier it is to flip, because when you land, when you fall, if you weigh 20 pounds more than you need to, it's not a bad thing at all. It's not a bad amount of weight, like a body image and all that. But if you weigh 20 pounds more and you fall, that's multiplied. And especially, you know, if you don't have the strength to back it up. So you're going to see a lot of kids in these gyms, and this is, you know, a lot of the, I learned a lot of this fear process there. You have, you know, girls who are probably not physically conditioned enough to be able to do the skills, start throwing them way too soon and getting overly spotted by someone really big. So you see, you know, these big like powerlifter looking dudes who are, you know, throwing these people over into the backflips to make it seem like they do it.
Okay.
When they do it by themselves, it's not there. So you start to, but everyone reacts differently. So it's like, I can't say there's not one answer. I can look at how somebody reacts when they do it. They have to do it is one thing. You know, you do the drills and then you do the movement and then you see what the reaction is.
Okay.
But it's one of those, I can't say because it's different for everyone. And for me, I experiment with it. Like I use these few years in cheerleading when I coached as like experimentation to see what kind of methods to get over fear work better.
All right. Very nice.
But being relaxed and then kind of getting out, this is another one for me as well, getting out of your conscious mind.
Okay.
Because like realistically, if I have to think about something consciously, I can only do one thing at a time and it's probably going to paralyze me. So like one thing, for example, just one technique that I use as an example, let's say I'm doing my backflip. This is where I'm doing it. I'm going here and I'm going backwards.
Okay.
I don't want to think about it here. I'm going to do all my thinking here. I visualize, I do whatever techniques I need to. When I go here, there's no thought. I throw it. So like, this is just one example of a technique that I'd use.
Okay. Awesome. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into teaching in the second half of the interview.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back, guys. All right, we are back with Yuri, facing a beautiful sunset over North Chagrin Reservation here in Cleveland. What makes a good teacher, man?
Oh, so many things. There's so many directions I can go with this, so I'll try to go a couple of directions.
All right, feel free, man.
So first is knowing a good athlete or a good performer, whatever practitioner, is not the same as a good teacher, because people can learn, you know, from you if you know what works for yourself, but ultimately you have to know different methods.
Okay.
So you have to know, you have to know how to get into people's head and understand where they are in their own learning process.
Okay.
But it could be, okay, so let's say this. Let's say some dance classes that I've taken, there's very little instruction, right? It was like, follow along, do this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and go. Mm-hmm. So to me, I would, from some perspective, I may consider that shitty teaching. But from another perspective, you can learn a lot by being, you know, tossed in the fire as well.
Yeah.
But you have to be at the level to be able to do that. For me, it's about just understanding the learning process in itself and understanding where people are within that.
Okay.
And because usually the teaching that I do, I don't see people for a while. So I see people once, and maybe I don't see them again for 6 months or a year or two. Mm-hmm. So when I do a class or a workshop, it's about giving somebody a perspective that maybe they never had. Mm-hmm. So if they walk away looking at this skill a little bit differently than they did, that's a permanent change.
Okay.
And for me, the good classes and workshops that I've taken as well, it was exactly that. It was not, okay, I learned this exercise and it was cool. It was, I can see this now from here, and that changes forever now how I look at it.
Okay.
So, but yeah, but it all depends on what the goal is and what we're trying to learn. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some teachers, for example, in circus school, like the way I teach handstand is, you know, I go through a lot of theory, very technical, very whatever, all this other stuff. If you go to a circus school, it's going to be no theory. They're going to spot you for everything.
Okay.
Once in a while, they're going to tell you to push more. Uh-huh. And, but if you do that every day for a few years, you build some phenomenal athletes from it.
Okay.
But it's a difference as well as, you know, how often do they see you, whether they're trying to get out of it. So for me, a big part of it is also, I guess, managing expectations. So I'm trying to imagine, what do people want to get out of the class? Mm-hmm. How can I either give most of the people, because you can't make everyone happy, how can you give most people what they were expecting or change their expectations in a way that they still got something out of it?
Okay. How would you evaluate yourself as a teacher?
I mean, I'm pretty harsh on myself.
Okay. Why? So what are you good at as a teacher?
I don't know.
What can you improve on?
I don't know. I talk about stuff. But it depends. Like, I got lucky learning as an adult and understanding that adult learning process, because a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
So what I found, that there was a lot of details that I thought were obvious that I was aware of, that when I started working with adults, I realized that they were not even close to obvious. Mm-hmm. And it, for me, like what I thought was a beginner level, I've had to constantly reassess.
Okay.
Like what would I think is beginner, what I think is basic, I've had to break down further and further and further over the years.
So there's a new beginner.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's different levels of beginner.
Uh-huh.
But it's... like, you know, if I'm working a lot with dancers or circus population, you know, a basic coordination for them is going to be very different than a basic coordination for someone who comes from a different realm.
Gotcha.
So understanding different perspective, understanding different disciplines, how they all flow into each other, the different learning process. But it's, like, I don't know, for me, I try to kind of gauge the class in the moment as well.
Okay.
I know some people want more talk, more conversation. Mm-hmm. And one other thing, if I do more of a beginner workshop, I'll probably talk more because probably their work capacity for the physical arts. Exactly. If I'm doing a 3-hour beginner workshop on handstands, these people can't handle 3 hours of handstands. So I'm going to talk a lot. We're going to do some exercises. We'll go through a lot of theory. If I'm doing a 3-hour advanced workshop on handstands, we're going to need more reps to get things done anyway.
Okay.
And they're going to need less theory because they have a lot of basics within themselves already. So it's, yeah, but that depends on the group. That depends on, again, it's so...
it's a loaded question, I know, and I apologize for putting you kind of a
trick. I mean, it's pretty much any question. Yeah. It's very situational.
Gotcha.
And I know I used to plan things out, like when I first started teaching seminars, because I was worried, like, oh, how am I going to have 2 days of material? I have to write all this down. And I realized I was a lot better just improvising.
Okay.
And I found that improvising, I was actually able to make a lot of modifications because I was in a better, just more relaxed mind state.
Okay,
more flexible. Rather than saying, okay, I have to do this, and then we have to do this.
Uh-huh.
Like, nah, we'll go wherever, natural flow, whatever direction we want to choose.
Okay, very cool.
Let it happen.
You mentioned adult learning, and I'm an adult, I think, most of the time. And let's say I'm trying to learn handstands, right? Or some other movement. And again, pardon the phrase. What are some of, I guess, another loaded question, but generally speaking, what are some of the biggest challenges adults have in learning new skills that you've seen?
So the main, like, this is very general.
Yeah.
So kids are hardwired to learn. They're pretty much built to learn whatever they can. So a child can learn something without actively wanting to. Like, as a kid, let's say, whatever, my dad does this thing, I'd be like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to learn it. Kids are going to learn it anyway just from being exposed to it.
Okay.
Because that's what kids do. And they don't have to understand something to learn it. Mm-hmm. Right? A kid can do this movement because they was told to do it, and that was it. And there's no, and that's why you see a lot of, like, really good athletes who are really shitty teachers, because they never actually understood what they were doing, mm-hmm. but they were able to do it at, you know, the highest level.
Okay.
What was the question?
Adults.
Oh, adults. Okay. Adults. So the main difference is that an adult most of the time has to consciously understand something, has to consciously learn something before it moves into the subconscious.
Okay.
Not all the time. You can still bypass it sometimes, but Like there are a lot of things that go unsaid sometimes when you teach kids mm-hmm. that like for adults, it's good to hear in words. It's okay. good to bring some concepts to light. So that's one thing. The second is fear of the unknown. Fear of the unknown or discomfort in going into new places. Mm-hmm. So like handstands being an example. Someone who hasn't been upside down doesn't have the same perspective. So either it's going to be fear or it's something else pulls them from being upside down. So there is that psychological element of people want to resist change. So something that's new, people are going to try to either make it like what they know, right? Or just resist it altogether.
Okay.
So two examples within handstands. Handstand is not a strength move, right? It's about stacking the joints. Mm-hmm. It's about being relaxed.
Okay.
Someone who's naturally strong, who's never done it as a resting position, mm-hmm. they're going to use their strength. They're going to use their shoulders.
Okay.
So this is a way of resisting the unknown and turning it into what they know.
Okay.
That's one example. The other example of resisting the unknown, someone gets upside down and they just collapse their body because it's... I guess two reactions. One is to fight,
yeah.
and the other is like the fainting goat, just you know, just to give off on it.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, you have to understand consciously what's happening, and you know, break things down to a point where you can consciously start to make different corrections. The other thing that I teach with adults is not only the proper technique, but also learning to do it a little bit wrong.
Okay.
First of all, for his versatility, because it's not a perfect world, so it won't be perfect. But also, you appreciate the middle ground by learning extremes. So if I only learn it the proper way, I don't develop the same appreciation as if I learned it wrong, right? So maybe if I learn a handstand, you know, as like a mini planche, and I think that's what straight is, I'm going to resist going to a straight line. But if I learn it the other way, if I learn a planche, and then I learn like a hollow back variation, the straight handstand is now no longer an extreme.
Okay, got it.
So that's just another perspective of how to look at it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very interesting. It actually reminds me of several conversations that I've had with past episodes in terms of we're talking weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting specifically, and being able to not always receive, you know, the snatch in a mm-hmm. perfect position because it's never always going to be perfect, right?
Yep.
You're going to have one foot forward, one arm backwards sometimes, and still being able to come out from the bottom and stand up with that weight. So that's a very, very, very good point. If I've never done a handstand, what is the first thing? But I want to do a handstand. What is the first thing that I need to do?
So the first thing, well, it's a few different things.
Okay.
One is just to check like basic physical prerequisites, right? Can you put your arms up above your head, like approximate, right?
Okay.
So if my shoulder mobility is here, I need to address that first.
Okay.
If I can get my arms somewhere here, I can already do part of the handstand.
So I can do
some variations. the main thing, like apart from just basic physical prerequisites, is learning how to fall first.
Okay.
So the first thing I teach is as an adult, handstand is relatively safe art. Like even the worst case scenario, I handstand, I fall on my back. It probably hurts the ego more than it hurts the body, even if there might be a couple bruises. But that's always with adults, the first thing, like apart from basic, you know, just physical preparation, that's always one of the first things I teach is learning how to fall. Because you never, if you don't learn how to fall, you never get the confidence to do it by yourself. You're always like, if I don't step to the edge of the cliff and know that I can jump off safely, I'm always going to be like this. I'm never even going to come close to it. So that's part of it psychologically, but also just for safety, because like adults can be pretty good at hurting themselves. So if you can give someone a safe exit, then yeah, not only does it change the confidence level, mm-hmm. but it allows them to, again, handstand is relatively safe. So once you learn how to fall, pretty much the only risk injury-wise is going to be some overuse injuries.
Got it.
Yeah, so that's a big one. But other than that, it's like basic flexibility, basic understanding of learning. If you think of it as an extension from standing, when I stand, I'm not very tense. I don't need to be, but I feel where my joints are. So because I'm stacked vertically, I can be relaxed. So it's understanding that you can stand using your skeletal structure.
Okay.
There's some muscle activation in a handstand, of course, but I definitely don't follow that school of squeeze everything unless it's a specific situation that requires it.
Okay, got it.
Like when I if you're learning how to stand, you don't learn by squeezing everything.
Yeah.
It's actually more dangerous because if you knock yourself over, you can't react.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think apart from basic physical preparation is knowing how to fall.
Okay.
Like having a safe exit, it's something that a lot of schools of, you know, thought, like whatever, yoga, and I'm not calling yoga out, but they don't really teach how to fall.
Yeah.
But handstand, literally handstand in itself, balancing, you're constantly falling.
True.
You're constantly falling and correcting yourself. So how do you appreciate how to correct yourself unless you can appreciate what it is to fall all the way?
Got it. What have been some of the biggest influences in your adventure?
Journey? So many. It's too many to list because really I try to learn, whether it's a positive or negative lesson, I try to learn from everyone I can. You know, I've been around a lot of, you know, high-level athletes who really made an impression on me. A lot of high-level circus performers as well who really, like, I learned a lot from them. And I learned a lot of negative lessons as well, like what being around people, I learned what I wouldn't do in business as well. I've learned some good lessons from people, and I've learned some lessons like, okay, these guys are super shady. I'm glad that I worked for them for a couple of years because I know a line that I wouldn't cross in my own business.
Okay, got it.
But I know, like, if I'm going to drop names, Valentin was one. Kit Lachlan was another one that I was really lucky to meet him when I did.
Is he out in California?
He's in Australia.
Okay, way off.
But he has a few books. He's been doing it for a long time. He's a flexibility guy.
Okay.
But I know, like, when I first started teaching workshops, because he's very open with his business and with everything he does, so I asked him a lot of questions, and I was able to kind of loosely base my business template off the way he's been doing it.
Okay.
And then I modified it later on for my own means, but like that was incredibly helpful as far as, you know, how to be able to do this for a living.
Got it.
So that's really cool. Yeah, moving to Vegas, just everyone I've been able to meet and train with.
Okay, very cool. What's next for you, man?
Too many things at once.
Too many things
at once. I mean, I'm traveling, I'm teaching workshops, I'm trying to consolidate my travels a bit more. So honestly, I'm trying not to travel as much. It's very stressful. And this last 7-week trip I had, it was a lot more stress than I wanted. So I'm trying to keep my trips a bit shorter. Trying to write a second book, trying to make more instructional videos.
Okay.
Trying to do more auditions and more performing as well, but it's hard to do everything at once.
Yeah. What, speaking of the places you've been, anything that's any place that kind of stands out, not necessarily for the seminar you had, but just like a cool place that you visited that you would recommend somebody else go visit?
I like Ireland a lot.
Okay.
But I didn't get to go this year because I had issues with the UK visa, and I decided just not to go to Ireland to play it safe. Mm-hmm. Iceland was really cool. Switzerland was cool as well. Like, just visually is very stunning. And a lot of mountains. It's you see so much more just because everything's so open.
Okay.
I'm trying to think where else. A lot of places.
Okay. So those are three. Those are three good.
But Iceland was really cool just because it's like there's nowhere else that looks like it.
Yeah. We had the pleasure of being there for I think 10 days. 10 days. Yeah, and we only saw like quarter of the island. It was beautiful. Where can people find you?
I have a website, yuri-mar.com.
Need to update that bio.
I do. I haven't updated my website in a few years, but I don't even know what to put. At that point, that was when I was just made my website.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to write some shit. But I haven't even looked at it. If I did, I'd probably delete the whole thing. Website, Facebook, just my name, Yuri Marmorstein.
Okay.
Instagram at Yuri_Marmorstein. My book, if you're interested in the handstand book, it's on my website. And then it's on Amazon and Smashwords.
I was going to ask if it's available on Amazon.
I make more money from it if you download it from a website Amazon.
Gotcha. So we'll link
Amazon
it
takes a pretty big cut.
All right, cool. So we'll link it up to the website. Yeah. But all that information we'll include in the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Awesome. Yuri, thank you for
for
suffering the last 50 minutes and taking on the mosquitoes. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
No problem.
Take care, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap on another great episode of Uncharted Performance. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a second and leave us a rating and review on iTunes and Stitcher. Each month, we will select a winner to win a special prize. Let us know when and where you are listening by tagging us at Uncharted Performance on Instagram and at Reach Uncharted on Twitter. Take care for now and see you next time. And as always, rage on, UP Nation, and reach the Uncharted. Take care, guys. Bye.